Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Psychology of the Unconscious is an early major work by Carl Gustav Jung, first emerging from the 1912 study usually associated with transformations and symbols of the libido, and later revised into Symbols of Transformation. It belongs to depth psychology, psychoanalytic theory, and comparative symbolism. But it is also a transitional text in the history of modern psychology because it marks the point at which Jung began moving away from the Freudian model. Rather than treating unconscious material chiefly as disguised sexual wish fulfillment, Jung examines fantasy, myth, religion, and symbolic imagery as expressions of a broader psychic energy. The book uses clinical interpretation, literary references, mythological parallels, and the fantasy material of a documented case to argue that the unconscious has a creative and formative role in personality. Its purpose is not simply therapeutic explanation. It proposes a wider psychology of meaning, transformation, and symbolic development. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Libido reinterpreted as general psychic energy rather than sexual drive alone. One of the central arguments of psychology of the unconscious is the broadening of libido beyond the Freudian emphasis on sexuality. Jung does not deny that sexual impulses matter, but he resists making them the single explanatory key for symbolic life. In this book, libido is treated more generally as psychic energy, capable of appearing in erotic desire, religious longing, ambition, fantasy, creativity, fear, and symbolic transformation. This shift matters because it changes how symptoms, dreams, and fantasies are interpreted. A symbolic image does not have to be reduced to a concealed sexual meaning. It may represent the movement of energy from one psychological aim to another. Jung is especially interested in moments when energy withdraws from ordinary adaptation and reappears in archaic or mythic forms. Such regression is not automatically pathological. It can signal that the psyche is searching for older, deeper symbolic patterns through which renewal becomes possible. This reinterpretation helps explain why the book was historically decisive in the break between Jung and Freud. Asked, it replaces a narrower drive theory with a more expansive account of psychological motivation, one that can include sexuality while also making room for religion, myth, art, and self-development. Secondly, mythological parallels as evidence of recurrent structures in the psyche, the book is distinctive for its extensive use of mythological, religious, and literary parallels. Jung examines symbolic material not only as private fantasy but as part of a wider human pattern. When similar images appear in individual fantasies, ancient myths, heroic legends, religious motifs, and poetic forms, Jung sees this recurrence as psychologically significant. His method is not historical proof that one story caused another, rather, it is comparative interpretation. He asks why certain motifs repeatedly become useful for expressing inner conflict, transformation, danger, sacrifice, rebirth, or the search for meaning. This approach anticipates later Jungian ideas about archetypal patterns, although the technical system of analytical psychology was still developing when this work appeared. The concrete importance of myth in the book is that it gives depth to individual material. A fantasy that might look eccentric or merely personal can be understood as drawing on symbolic forms that human beings have used across cultures to represent psychic transition. This makes the unconscious less like a private storage room of repressed memories and more like a symbolic field where personal experience connects with inherited or culturally enduring forms. The strength of this method is its breadth. The limitation is that its claims can be difficult to verify empirically. Thirdly, fantasy material as a route into unconscious conflict and transformation. Psychology of the unconscious is built around the interpretation of fantasy material, especially the famous case material associated with Miss Frank Miller, whose fantasies had been published before Jung analyzed them. Jung treats these fantasies as psychologically meaningful productions, rather than random inventions. Their images, emotional tone, heroic motifs, and religious associations become evidence of an inner drama in which psychic energy is displaced, transformed, and symbolized. The important point is methodological. Jung reads fantasy as a living expression of unconscious processes, not only as a symptom to be decoded into a fixed hidden cause. He is interested in how images develop, repeat, intensify, and connect with older symbolic forms. This allows him to examine the movement between conscious attitude and unconscious compensation. If conscious life becomes too narrow, the unconscious may produce images that challenge, enlarge, or destabilize that attitude. The book, therefore, gives fantasy a serious psychological status. It is not treated as childish residue or escapism alone, though it may contain regressive elements. It can also reveal conflicts that the conscious mind cannot yet formulate conceptually. This emphasis helped prepare later Jungian techniques that attend closely to dreams, active imagination, symbolic amplification, and the constructive function of images. Fourthly, regression as a potential source of renewal, not merely a fall into illness. A major conceptual move in the book is the reinterpretation of regression. In a strictly pathological model, regression means a backward movement toward infantile or primitive forms of desire. Jung accepts that regression can become destructive, especially when it traps the individual in fantasy and reduces practical adaptation, yet he also argues that withdrawal of psychic energy from the external world may serve a constructive function. When ordinary conscious attitudes fail, the psyche may return to earlier layers of symbolic material in order to recover energy and reorganize itself. This idea is crucial to the book because it explains why archaic images, mythic heroes, religious symbols, and sacrificial motifs appear in modern psychological material. They are not simply outdated relics. They may provide forms through which the psyche dramatizes crisis and transition. Jung connects this process to transformation energy that has become blocked in one form can be redirected through symbolic work into a new orientation. The reasoning is concrete. A person who cannot solve a conflict at the level of conscious may experience symbolic images that stage the problem in older, more emotionally powerful terms. The risk is inflation or confusion. The benefit is that regression can become a path toward psychological renewal rather than only a sign of decline. Lastly, the historical break. From Freudian psychoanalysis toward analytical psychology, the book is historically important because it helped define the separation between Jung and Freud. Their disagreement was not merely personal. It concerned the scope of psychology itself. Freud had developed a powerful model of unconscious conflict centered on repression, infantile sexuality, and the interpretation of symptoms. Jung, in this work, moves toward a broader symbolic psychology in which unconscious images may express religious, mythic, creative, and developmental meanings. This transition is visible in the book's structure and method. It still belongs to the psychoanalytic world of dream and fantasy interpretation, but it stretches that world beyond the assumptions that held the early movement together. The consequences were substantial. Jung would later develop analytical psychology, including more systematic accounts of the collective unconscious, archetypes, individuation, psychological types, and the compensatory function of dreams. Psychology of the unconscious should therefore be read as a threshold text rather than a finished statement of the mature Jungian system. Its value lies partly in showing the argument in formation. The book captures Jung testing the limits of psychoanalysis and proposing that the unconscious is not only a site of repression, but also a source of symbolic organization, cultural continuity, and psychological transformation. In conclusion, Psychology of the Unconscious is best suited for readers who want to understand the foundations of Jungian thought rather than only encounter simplified summaries of archetypes or personality types. It will be especially valuable for students of depth psychology, psychotherapy, intellectual history, mythology, religion, literature, and cultural studies. Readers looking for a practical self-help manual may find it demanding because its method depends on dense symbolic comparison and early 20th century theoretical language. Its benefits are mainly intellectual and interpretive. It teaches readers to see dreams, fantasies, myths, and religious images as psychologically meaningful forms rather than decorative or irrational material. It also clarifies why Jung separated from Freud and why that separation mattered for the later development of analytical psychology. Compared with other classic books on the unconscious, this work stands out because it does not confine unconscious life to repression or pathology. It presents the unconscious as dynamic, symbolic, and capable of transformation, while still remaining tied to clinical concerns. Compared with later Jung texts, it is less systematic and sometimes more speculative, but that is also part of its significance. It shows a major psychological theory at the moment of emergence, when libido, myth, fantasy, and transformation were being reassembled into a new framework for understanding the psyche. If you would like to support Carl Gustav Jung, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.